listening to New Layer, a design podcast with Tanner Christensen and Jasmine Friedel.
The question I want to talk to you today about usually comes in two prominent flavors.
Okay.
The first is...
chocolate and vanilla.
If only. The first is, I'm a brand new product designer. Maybe I just left university or some kind of program, and I'm looking for my first job. Where should I go? Should I go to an agency? Should I work freelance? Should I work at a startup? Or should I work at big name tech company? The other flavor of this question is, I'm working at startup, agency, whatever, and I think I'm going to get more value if I go to big tech company or agency or freelance.
Cool. The answer is yes.
Like most things, it depends.
Yeah. I mean, I guess...
Here's how I think we can navigate this. There are pros and cons to each of these types of institutions or teams or whatever you want to call them. Mm-hmm. And depending on where you're at in your career and what you want to grow, a change to one of these may help you. And if you're just starting out, I think it's a little bit easier because, well, I think that just starting out, any experience is going to be helpful experience no matter where you go.
Yes, like a job is better than no job.
Some work experience,
yeah, is better than
zero work experience. So let's maybe focus on, let's break this into the two categories, I think. Maybe.
Just big and small companies?
No, I meant the actual scenario of I'm just starting out versus I'm looking to transition.
Yeah, I mean, I think they're kind of the same. Mm-hmm. And I guess when I'm thinking about this, I'm like, yeah, get experience, figure out what you like. And I think we've talked about that before. But then the question is like, I don't think it really, not the question. I think it just doesn't matter. Like, I think in both scenarios, it's never going to be apples to apples. Mm-hmm. Like big company A and big company B are not going to be the same.
Right.
Agency A and agency B are not going to be the same. And so there's so many different facets of what each will give you. The question is, what are you optimizing for? What are you going to learn? And then as you change, like, what are you going to learn next?
Right. And so I think that's exactly what we should be talking about is, what are the kinds of things that you and I have seen over our own careers or the people we've worked with or networked with? What are the kinds of things that each of these different options provides you more often than not, right? So for example, working at a really large tech company, something that you will come face to face with as a designer is this idea of accessibility and scale. Things like translating the product you use, making sure that it works right to left as well as left to right, all of these kind of really very large things, right?
Yeah. So like if you're working at a big company, if you're working at Google, at Apple, at something like that, you have to think of how many users are you going to design for? And if it's like all of them, like all the users across the world, all of them would, I guess, apply to a small amount of users too. But, you know, where are these users located? What kind of phones do they have? You know, Apple, you're not going to be designing for Android, spoiler. But what is the scale? And there's magnitude in that, which means that you're going to learn a lot about designing for a lot of different use cases. But you're also going to have like enormous impact, even doing the small things, because you'll probably, even if you test something, reach like tens of thousands to hundreds of thousands of users. And that's some really interesting experience that you can say, I understand how impact works. And you can measure just about anything because of that scale.
Yeah, it's a great reason to work at a very large, especially tech company, or non-tech, I guess, is you do have that immediate impact. I remember working at Facebook and launching like some small feature, and within an hour, it's like, yep, a million people have seen this, and we now know whether or not people understand it, right?
Yeah.
Another benefit of working at a very large company is the people you work with. Often you can work with really, really notable experts. I mean, you and I could sit here and list off dozens of designers we've had the pleasure of working with who have really inspired us and helped us inform how we think about design. Mm-hmm. And also some designers who maybe we aren't super happy to have worked with. But you will get that kind of diversity of working with people. I remember when I first joined Facebook, it wasn't just designers that I was working with. There was a psychologist, I won't give him a shout out here, but a psychologist I'd been following for many years who worked there. Mm-hmm. And I was like, holy crap, like I'm working next door to this guy that I've been.
Yeah, like there's literally some famous designers that will will work there either because they're interested in the problem or it's just like a really cushy gig.
Right. So there's some advantages to working at a big co. There's also some disadvantages. You will inevitably be a cog in the machine. You're just another designer in a list of thousands of designers.
Right. And most of the big companies, I mean, Apple might be the exception, are not design led. They tend to be engineering led or product led. Facebook sort of came up being experimentation driven. And so being a cog in a machine might be like you may just be enabled or empowered a little bit less than you had previously. When I was looking for roles, I remember talking to one of my friends who was a director at Facebook specifically. And she had said, you know, even as a director, you're just middle management. And so I think about that a lot. It's like, who's the actual decision makers? You will have some, you know, autonomy in your designs, but you will also work with PMs and engineers who are very opinionated. And that's a good thing. But all of the strategies ladder up into bigger strategies. And so it's not, you know, say you're working at a startup right now. It's not the same where it's like, oh, I think we should do this. And then you just go off and do it.
Right, exactly. So to contrast, exactly like you said, contrast the big company, small startups like where I'm working at, it's pretty much you have so much work to do in front of you that like it's almost endless. If you want to do something and it's going to have some impact on the business, well, you just go do it, right?
Right.
You learn how to do it, you get support, and you make it happen.
You also, though, at big companies tend to work with engineers particularly who really know how to build. And who have worked with design before and who have worked with product partners. And so there's like, I think so I've worked with some amazing engineers, some of the best engineers I've ever met. And I really just like appreciate them as people were at Facebook. And it's because, you know, the talent, this just goes without saying, like, because larger companies are very, very well known, they have some of the best and brightest talent because they can afford them. And because they have the reach, people are just aware of those jobs. It's often harder, and I say this from hiring manager experience, it's harder when you're at a smaller company and trying to get people to come work for you when you pay them about half as much, either because there's no, and you might be offering stock options instead of restricted stock units, and those can, you know, sometimes double people's salaries. And it's just not as well known of a place. And so there's a lot more questions for candidates on, hey, what does process look like here? Does design have a seat at the table? What are my peers going to be? And so I think just that that ability to attract and retain talent is sort of a more of a given. Now, obviously, Facebook specifically, and you and I always talk about Facebook because we work there, but there's other more ethical issues surfacing now on, you know, do people want to go work at Facebook now? But
yeah, this is, wow, there's a whole can of worms, and maybe we can pick out one or two here relevant to this conversation. But wow, yeah, there's a lot to be said here. Let me see if I can focus here on a few key points. One is that you're absolutely right. Companies like Facebook and Google in particular tend to have some of the best engineering talent, and like it's just reality. Part of that is sheer numbers. Like, they hire every engineer who wants a job can kind of get in there as long as they're good enough quality, right? But then they have lots of code reviews and systems in place to help that quality ensured. That's not limited to big companies. For example, my startup, the engineers that work with us right now, because we're such a small startup, they all came from Facebook. So they're really remarkable engineers. I love working with them. Some of the best I've ever worked with. You're not going to get that at every startup, though.
Yeah, and I think that's one of the questions when you're like, should I go to a small company? You say, who formed this company? Because a lot of sort of big tech folks, when they're done with the big tech, they go off and start their own things. And so you end up having a lot of that talent. And so I think that's an assumption that isn't always true.
Yep, exactly. The other thing, this one's really touchy. So I don't know how to say this. I'm just going to say it.
Just say it, yeah.
Some of these companies are esteemed for the scale that they've achieved and the product success they've had. And what inevitably happens as these companies grow is they continue to grow. I remember there were days at Facebook long ago where we would have new designers introduce themselves like at the beginning of every week. And there were times where that group of new hires would like surround the entire room. There were so many new designers being added to the team that like it was impossible to know everyone's name.
Yeah.
In fact, at some point, the organization, the design team there stopped doing those intros because there were just so many designers joining. And so the point I want to make is like, if you want to join a company that's large in order to learn and have larger impact and potentially make a lot of money and things like that, that's great. If you want to go to say, I worked at such and such company and put that on your resume, you have to consider the fact that some of these companies are just hiring for the sake of growing their team. Like they're no longer, they don't have that same quality bar.
Ooh, that's a strong statement.
Yeah. I want to stand by that. So,
well, I think what, without being feisty or spicy here, I think we could probably say, you know, the experience we had when I started at Facebook, there were 4,000 people. The experiences are not going to be the same at 4,000 people to 40,000 people. And there are things that will get diluted as you get to be a bigger company. There are
processes, red tape.
Right. And so, you know, you may not report up into a single VP of design. You might have different design groups that have different culture and process. And so one part of a company may feel very different than another part of the company. And so in many ways, you could translate to say, it actually feels like a smaller company. And all of this goes back to like, what matters to you?
Exactly.
And what are you trying to learn?
If you're just starting out, I really don't, I want to make sure this is true, but I feel like you really can't go wrong. Like if there's a place where you can get in and you do good work that you enjoy, like go and do that work.
You know what? I'm just thinking of the one thing that people usually synthesize this down to is, am I going to get mentorship?
Mm.
And, you know, they're like at small companies, I don't know who's going to mentor me.
Mm-hmm.
And if you sort of like strip away any assumptions on what mentorship is, and the assumption is usually there's one person that's going to sit down with me once a week and we're going to talk through stuff and I'm going to learn from them, to you're going to learn by doing, you're going to learn through the with the people around you. You know, bigger companies may have formal mentorship programs. They may have more diversity programs. I can't tell you how many companies I've talked to where they're like, I'm like, oh, cool. Like all of your leadership is white men. And they're like, oh, we can't really like invest in that until we've, you know, we need to just get things done right away. And we're focused on product right now. And it's a shame because you should always be focusing on that. But some of the programs come later mm-hmm. when the funding is really rich.
Right. So I think one of the areas to look out for is the being the sole designer. The only reason I think that's worth noting is because not because lack of mentorship or learning opportunities, you will have those absolutely, but it will get lonely when you're talking to people who don't understand what you do or how you do it. It's hard to like collaborate, but you have other opportunities outside of your work to do those things.
Yeah. Well, and I like when I started at Facebook, I was the only designer on the payments team. And yes, I had designers around me, but I was working with six PMs and 30 some engineers. And so that when you think of just the sheer numbers, that in many ways modeled the single designer working alone. And I learned to design through engineers. Well, I knew how to design a little bit, but I learned through engineers and I talked to them about what could be done and what couldn't be done and how we were going to work together. And so there's other ways to learn. And then I would get some, you know, I'd still have critique and things like that. But I think there's sort of intent behind, you know, it you can find those things like mentorship, you can find support. And you would ask questions in an interview, like, how are you thinking about design right now? You know, when somebody does designs, if not a designer, how do they get feedback? How thoughtful is your product process? So there's ways you can sort of understand if this is going to be a hostile environment or a flexible one when you're talking to the team. And that's regardless of if it's a big company or a small company.
Right. So another reason people often look to join an established, fairly large company is for that clout that comes with having that name on your resume. And I think we can start off this part of the conversation by saying it's true, right? Like to some degree, people will see Google or a large named company on a resume and say, okay, clearly you have some really good experience. I want to say though, that especially over the last, I don't know, 3 or so years, the more designers I've met, the more people I've been involved with conversations or mentoring or anything, the more I've come to understand that it really doesn't matter. If your work is really great for the problems that you're trying to solve at whatever company you're at, that can stand out on its own.
I think what I'd say is I wish it didn't matter, because it doesn't matter to me, but there are certainly recruiters and sourcers who will try and pull people from Facebook because it's an easy pool.
Yes.
So, and I can't tell you how many, like, it was so easy to get, I guess I get them now, but I think that's more being in leadership land. I'd get so many emails every month at Facebook. I never responded to any of them. But frankly, when you never know as a hiring manager if somebody's on their way out and maybe is on a performance plan or something like that, or if they're like the most amazing designer at Facebook. Something really interesting too is this idea of leveling. I've actually been thinking about this a lot because we've been doing calibrations, and calibrations are when you do performance reviews. And so what you want to do is you want to look at people's experience, how long they've been in their level. Like, let's say we're promoting somebody from a mid-level to a senior level. And one of the things I've noticed is, and many companies do this, when you get hired into a level, you usually need to spend some time there. Like, you don't get to be a senior designer from a mid-level designer after 4 months usually. And so what we've been doing is we've been looking outside of just sort of their time in the level at our company, and instead saying how many total years of experience do they have, and looking at the trajectories of people. And that's not the only factor, but it is, something to look at when you're looking at promoting people. Obviously are they doing the job? Do they have great skills? Have there been things holding them back? But something I've noticed is sort of looking at people's career trajectories is that it doesn't really matter. You might have somebody who is a senior designer some other place and came in at a mid-level role.
Right.
Places like Facebook. I think Google does like UX designer 1 and UX designer 2 and things like that. Mm-hmm. But levels aren't always something that you get to put in your title. And I've had some pretty strong debates with candidates where they're like, "Well, I was a senior designer here.
Right.
Why would, I should be principal, ready for this staff role." And I'm like, "No, I actually think you're a mid-level."
Yep.
And so I think sometimes it matters to people that they have their title. Like, that's the most important thing.
Right.
And so they can go to a startup and be like, "Well, I'm going to be a senior designer. And then I can get in as a senior designer at, Netflix or something like that." And you're like, nah, dude, no.
This is one of my little things that scratches at me sometimes is when you're reviewing resumes or looking at portfolios and you see someone who is like executive vice president of design or co-founder, CEO. And like, you realize it's like their little side hobby that they've been doing for a month.
Yeah.
And it's like, not quite the same as being a senior product designer at Apple.
And the reason is, like, you actually haven't experienced the things that we expect you to experience at X company.
Right,
and this all goes back.
The collaboration.
And that's why I was thinking, working on an engineer-driven company. And this is, let me sort of reset. This is something that I think about when I think about agency work, which consulting, I think, ends up giving a very similar skill set where you're sort of working with clients for brief periods of time. Because this is typically a phased approach to work where a client will pay for strategy or they'll pay for the design work. And then they'll have somebody else go build the thing. And so when you're thinking about those, you have to say, well, do I have the experience of working with engineers? Do I have the experience of understanding how to measure success and how to set up goals at the beginning of the project in order to determine whether it'll be successful? And so I think there's some stuff in there, which it's like, okay, well, level actually doesn't matter. It doesn't matter at all. Of course, I mean, it matters to people who care about level, and it might matter in terms of pay. But you really have to look what's underneath these things. And that's probably the theme of this whole conversation is whatever facet you're looking at, what's underneath it.
Yeah, a good example here might be someone who has worked freelance or as part of an agency, probably more the freelance consulting, and they've done it for, let's say, 10 to 20 years, and then they want to go move in-house. one of the challenges they're going to face is, well, how do you communicate your ideas to other stakeholders that are just as responsible for the work as you are? Because that's not something you get a lot as a freelancer or, as you said, as a consultant.
Yeah. I mean, if they're, and that's another, like, it's like, yeah, it depends. Because if they're consulting in-house and acting just like a full-time employee, then yeah. But if they're sort of doing their own thing and working through one contact, maybe not.
Yeah. So this was one of my challenges as I moved into a formalized official quote unquote product design role was I had a lot of product design experience based on my own side projects. I'd been building them for 7 years or something. And, you know, my apps were successful. They were designed reasonably well.
I remember you saying yesterday you almost got a TV show off of one.
I did almost get a TV show off of one of my apps, which Brainbeam, which was like the top three app in the world out of all apps for a little while, which was really cool. But here's the thing, like even with all of that work and all that ability to see the technical side and marketing and all that stuff, I built those things on my own. I didn't know what it was like to try to hand off an idea to an engineer or to take their problems with me or to do anything like formalized research. Like that was a whole foreign
or
concept to
get feedback
me.
Or pushback.
That's
or,
right.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like to help not only have my own vision of the work, but to work with someone else who also has a vision of the work. And maybe those things don't mesh well together.
Or design, you know, in a piece of a different product. Like yours were all independent standalone things.
Right. It was, they were like small, small things in this like realm of the world rather than a singular product. So for me, that was something that I had to learn and adapt very quickly coming into a product design role. I needed to learn, well, how do you communicate with others and what's the best way to pull people along with your ideas? And then how do you negotiate and all of these kind of things? And that's just not something that I would have gotten if I didn't join a company full time. Could I have joined a startup and learned those same things? Absolutely. I think so. In my case, I joined a larger company, and it worked out well. But I think it all comes back to where are your gaps? What do you really want to learn? Like, what are you trying to accomplish with your career?
Mm-hmm.
Joining a different company, joining a different size company, it may or may not help you, but you really need to be in tune with what you're trying to accomplish.
Yeah. And I think like that's something I've learned. I just had so many jobs over the past 5 years. Too many. So many. It's frustrating. But what I'm learning every place I go, where I really thrive best. What I want to, I can be very intentional about what I learn next. I can be very intentional about where I set myself up. And I, you know, this is after years being a product designer. But I think the more you're willing to, A, understand what you're going after. And some of this is like, it's okay to say, I've got family to support. And having a high paying job is the most important thing to me. Great. Then, you know, that's sometimes you don't have the luxury of saying, I'm going to go off and work with somebody and they're going to pay me half salary because they're just trying to get their startup off the ground. You may not have that luxury to do that. And so it's really important, I think, to go into things intentionally and say, what am I going to learn?
Wow.
What do I need?
Yeah. Here's exactly where my head's at now. I think you're absolutely right. And the first thought that came to me when you said that was a lot of us are very fortunate in that we have things like the internet to help us learn the things we need to know, right? It's pretty easy to connect with other people these days. Mm-hmm. Fairly easy. I mean, that's not trivial, but so the question then becomes, well, how do you know what pieces of the pie you're missing? How do you know what skills or areas of opportunity you have in your own life, right?
Self-awareness.
Yeah, that self-awareness subject. But how do you know that? Like, for example, let's say you have career ambitions to start your own company. Or to start a design studio, or to just be a lead designer at a really prominent company. Like, how do you know what skills you need to develop in order to do those things?
Well, I mean, you might not know starting off. And you might not, like, I was never super intentional for the first part of my career about where I worked. I was like, something's changing in my life. Cool. I'm going to get a job. I'm going to go with this acquisition. I'm going to go with this project move. But I think that's okay. I think the best thing to do in that case is make your decision off of some other criteria. You might be wrong. Like, oh gosh, I can't tell you how many times I've started a job and I'm like, oh, this is not what I signed up to do. You're going to learn something else. And so just like, you know, keeping your eyes open and really being able to take in and evaluate what you're learning, like you will figure out what you're missing if you're listening. But if you're just sort of like going in and going through the motions or whatever that is, or you know, going in with ego, where you're not really paying attention to the development that you're experiencing, then you won't be really in tune with what you could be learning next.
Two traits or characteristics, or dare I say abilities or skills, that tend to really help all designers, no matter where they work or what they're trying to do: grit and curiosity.
Grit and curiosity. Is grit the same as resilience? I know there's the book Grit.
There's a book named Grit.
There's a book named Grit.
Of course there is. Yeah, I think those two things are
of course are
very, very similar. Grit and resilience. It really comes down to your ability to weather the storm, or like not become weaker by it, but strengthened by it. It's like this notion of anti-fragility.
Yeah.
Are you familiar with this?
There's a book called that.
There is a book called that. That's where I learned about it. Where the opposite of fragile is what?
Is anti-fragile, because it's not about being rigid.
Right. It's
not strong.
The opposite of fragile is not strong.
Because strong breaks. Like if you think of, fragile might be, I don't know.
Like
example,
glass is fragile because you drop glass and it breaks everywhere, right?
Right.
The opposite of something that breaks is something that it doesn't just stay the way it is. It's not like a brick. A brick is strong, but a brick is not anti-fragile. Anti-fragile means you grow and improve from the thing that would otherwise destroy you. And so that's kind of what I think about grit and resilience, is this more anti-fragility, mm-hmm. where you go to a hard situation, and Jasmine, I know you've been in quite a few of these, like you said, over the last 5 years.
Oh my God.
But the thing about you is that you've walked away from each of these situations with something new. You've learned new skills, new ways of thinking, of seeing the world. Just a minute ago, you talked about how you're in calibrations now, and you're thinking about how you think about different leveling across companies and employees. And that's not something you knew, you know, 5 years ago. It's not something you really thought about. And so these opportunities, these challenges have really helped you grow. And that's something that I think you and I could both say is what we look to for designers that we're hiring, or that designers that we really admire.
Yeah.
They've gone through these experiences, whether an agency, a consultancy, a startup, school, and they're able to say, yeah, you know, it wasn't quite where I wanted to be, but here are the things I learned that I'm going to apply to the next opportunity that comes my way.
Yep. And I will say, all the great designers that have worked for me, the best of the best always have that growth mindset. And when we're talking about anti-fragility, the words that come to mind for me are like, there tends to be some sort of like resilience to it and some flexibility to it. And that learning piece, that sort of flexibility, when something doesn't like show up the way you want it to sort of embrace it. I'm not going to say good things come out of that, because they don't always, but sometimes mm-hmm. they do. And I think that growth is something that, I mean, the whole theme of this conversation is, where should I work? And it's like, I don't know. Where do you think you're going to be the happiest? Where are you going to grow? And when do I change? I don't know. Are you growing? Are you happy?
Are you learning something?
Maybe it's that simple.
There are a lot of designers. There are a lot of people that I've known in my life who think they want something, like you said a second ago. They think they want something, they get it, and then very, very quickly they're like, wow, this is not at all what I wanted. I got to get out of here. Do you know many designers like this?
Oh, just a handful.
And I think that's totally fine. And obviously, you know, you and I are very fortunate, I think, in our careers and how we think about things. But something I do always kind of look for in other designers is, well, how are you learning from the situation? Like, what are you taking away from it? And if you feel like you landed in somewhere that is not where you need to be now, where was that disconnect? Like, what did you actually think you were needing, and what were you hoping to get from it? Is there an opportunity to adapt? Is there an opportunity to learn and look at what you're at now? Like, how is the current experience adding to your previous experience, is all I'm saying. And,
yep.
And it doesn't really matter where you go to do that.
Well, I think there is some things that matter. Like I mentioned just a second ago, like, are you happy? Like, I think that's an underrated part of choosing the right job, because if you are unhappy and growing, it's going to do things for your mental health that are not great. And so, or you might not be able to see the growth because you're unhappy. And I think, you know, One of the things that people usually cling to are, am I going to work with good people?
Oh my gosh, yes.
Do I like my boss? Like, if you can answer yeses to those things, then you might be able to like bypass the am I happy piece and go straight to the growth piece. And growth makes people happy too. But that's probably the first question I'd ask is, how are the people?
Yes. Like, maybe that is a better question for us to start asking ourselves in our careers, is less like, what type of company should I go work at, or what like will my next big career step be, and more, who am I going to work with? What am I going to learn from them or get from them? And then what I personally would add to that is, what will I be able to add to their lives as well?
Ooh.
Like, that's very personal for me, but it's something to consider. Like,
okay,
what else could you add to the team and help them learn and grow as well? Right. Mm-hmm. We talk about this usually in terms of culture fit. Ooh, such a bad phrase, but there really is something there where it's not the culture fit. It's not a culture add. It's something about, are we going to challenge ourselves? Are we going to help each other see the world in new and different ways? Sometimes
I think that's actually diversity.
Yeah. Ooh. I think you nailed it. Diverse places, diverse opportunities.
Yeah. Diverse customers. But some, you know, are we homogenous? Mm-hmm. Or are we actually going to bring compliments and counters in a provocative way?
I love it. So to recap that last point here, I think this is really critical. If you are just starting out in your job or you're looking to make a career change, you need to really identify what's going to make you happy. It may not be what you first think it is.
And if you don't know, like, that's okay.
Yeah.
You might think like money is going to make you happy and then work for a boss that you don't like, or have a partner that's a pain in your booty. And so you can do exercises of thinking in work scenarios, when have I been the happiest, and figure out what those things are.
And you may need to go through a few experiences to really identify those things. I mean, again, this last, 5 years, you've gone through a lot, Jasmine. I've gone through a few challenging situations.
Yeah.
And I think we've both learned a lot. Now, we wouldn't have learned those things if we hadn't gone through those challenges, if we hadn't put ourselves in those situations.
Yeah. And I will say, like, myself as the queen of changing jobs here, because I worked at Facebook, CZI, Udacity, Intercom, and now Dropbox in the course of 5 years. Like, it's, people must look at my resume and go, what is going on? And what's going on is I've made decisions, or I've had decisions made for me. Mm-hmm. And there's a couple where I've been really intentional and said, this is not going to make me happy or help me grow. And there's other things like, you know, relocating my role to Ireland. Mm-hmm. Where I have no control, and that's like helped me move on. But I can still take each of those steps and say, okay, but what next? Like, what environment am I going to be put in next? And I can say there's at least been intentionality for me of those, even if I can't, sometimes you're not happy at work, not because it's something within your control. Some things change at jobs, you know. The project you are working on gets canceled, or, strategy changes or something like that.
COVID hits and suddenly your entire business is shut down.
Yeah.
Like, it happens, unfortunately.
Yeah.
It's hard.
And then your role gets relocated to Dublin.
To Dublin. Wait a minute.
Yeah. Yeah. But, and it's sometimes these are things without your control, and you can't figure it out by interviewing. Sometimes you don't have many options for a job and you took something because it was the only thing there. And that, you know, luxury of choice isn't available to you. And that's okay. Just when it becomes available to you, I think you really have to be ready for it. And that's one of the things I've been working really hard on, is even if I got myself into situations that were out of my control, I can control what I do with them. And that's something that's changed very much so from my mindset as a younger person, was really thinking that I needed to commit and stay and having a job. This is like the very being on the cusp of sort of Gen X, which was like white picket fence and have one job for life. And I really grew up with that mentality. And I think I've really intentionally changed that mindset, because I believe that happiness and growth matter. And I have autonomy and choice in that.
And you learned that primarily through experience, right?
Yeah, I learned that from experience and going through some experiences that did not make me happy and were blocking my growth.
I love that because I think it's such an important message that I need to hear a lot in my own life. And I think many of us need to hear, you can't be afraid to take a wrong turn. Sometimes those quote unquote wrong turns end up being the right turn for you at that time.
Oh God. Yeah.
And this is, let's just pause for a second, get a little meta.
Okay. Do it.
This is why I am so excited to be doing this podcast with you, Jasmine, because when we first thought about doing this podcast, I think years and years ago,
the fact that we actually materialized this is kind of a big deal.
The idea was we wanted to do something where we could just sit down and have a conversation, where we could share our honest opinions and thoughts. Sometimes those are wrong. Sometimes they're offensive. Sometimes they're helpful. Sometimes they're insightful. Mm-hmm. But what we really want to give listeners is just the authentic, honest, here's a perspective or two, do with it what you want. And being able to share your personal experience here, your personal struggles and how you've learned and adapted is exactly what the value I hope people get from this podcast.
Yep.
All right. So to wrap this up for this episode, where you start, if you're just starting out in your career, the things that matter for that are going to be getting that real experience, trying to develop some kind of perspective of the work that will come in your next job or the next one after that.
Yeah. And that comes through being aware.
You have to be self-aware, constantly looking at yourself saying, what about the work I'm doing now? Do I really find energizing? What is draining? And then also look at the people that you're going to be working with in the future. I'm not saying like, oh, I want to go work with this great idolized designer. Don't do that kind of thing. But say, what are the kinds of people that you want to work with? What will they help you learn? Mm-hmm. Why? How are they going to help you? What will you be able to help them with? What are perspectives you'll be able to add? So that diversity like we talked about. And what you'll realize is it's not going to necessarily matter too much where you end up as long as those things are fulfilled. It could be a very large company doing really exciting global work. It could be a really small, frightening startup who's just on the verge of going out of business, but that's exciting for you. It could be just doing your own thing, paving your own path forward and learning what that does for you. But in all of these cases, like it's going to be different for every person. And the only path forward is the one that you can take now. And so try to pay attention to what your journey is trying to tell you where to go, and you'll be all right.
Mm-hmm. Love it.
All right. Well, that's it for this week. Thanks everybody for listening. If you don't know, you can now show your support for the podcast. The minimal $1 donation every month or up to $5 or $10.
What a steal.
I know. Thank you to everyone who's already subscribed. This really means a ton to us. Just even the smallest amount just shows us that you care, that you're passionate about what we're doing, and you want us to show up every month, so we will. So to do that, you can go to, I think it's anchor.fm/new-layer/support. And if you do that, it's we cannot thank you enough. If you don't do that, that's okay too. Thank you for listening. We really appreciate it and hope you got some help out of this. If you have questions, comments, anything, you can always shoot us an email or reach us on Twitter. I am at Tanner C.
I need to change mine so I don't have to say this. It's at Jazzy33CA.
We should create like a short URL for yours.
I don't know.
Jasmine's Twitter.
I'm too lazy to change. This is like from my very first email days. Anyway.
All right. Well, thanks for listening. We'll see you next week.